Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at a pile of research all about parenting, and we're trying to pull out a roadmap, really, for what might be the toughest job there is, raising a challenging child.
Yeah.
Our mission here is to help you shift, to move from constantly reacting, you know, putting out fires, to actually planning strategically for change that, well, that lasts.
It's a really fundamental shift, actually. Most parents, maybe without even realizing it, are in what you called reactive parenting. You're always fighting the next fire.
Right. Every tricky moment feels like a crisis and interruption to your day.
Exactly. And what this heart-based approach developed by Dr. Scott Turansky suggests is something different. Instead of seeing bad behavior as just an interruption,
I see it as an opportunity.
Yes. A focused opportunity. A chance to intentionally, strategically move your child from point A, where they are now, to point B, where you hope they can be. And it's done using a unique plan, one that's customized for your child.
So it's not one size fits all.
Definitely not. The core idea is we're not just tweaking behaviors on the surface. We're aiming deeper. We're working on the heart.
And the heart, in this context, what exactly are we talking about?
It's defined here as that significant central place inside a child. It's where their tendencies, their character, you know, where that's managed and ultimately changed.
It makes me think of that old idea.
Yeah.
You know, what comes out reflects what's in.
Mm.
If you want better actions, you have to work on the source, the heart.
That's the foundation. Trying to change behavior without addressing the heart. Wow. It's like constantly trimming the leaves of a weed, but never pulling the root.
It looks better for a moment, but the problem just keeps coming back.
Exactly. So if we want to work on the source, the heart, we first need to understand what's really going on. We need to diagnose the challenge properly.
Okay.
The research we looked at breaks down the roots of these behavioral challenges into three main causes. And crucially, they're almost always woven together.
Ah, so it's rarely just one thing.
Very rarely. Which is why you need that holistic, heart-based, strategic plan. It strengthens the child's inner core against all these forces.
Okay, let's unpack those causes. The first category is biological causes.
Right. This is anything physical that's causing or contributing to the behavior. It could be something fairly simple, like a child who's chronically tired or hungry. That affects behavior, right?
Sure, we've all seen that.
But it also includes more complex diagnosable conditions. Things like ADHD, autism spectrum characteristics, dyslexia, auditory processing issues, sensory processing disorders. These biological factors create real struggles.
And those struggles can then trigger other kinds of reactions.
Precisely. Which leads us right into the second category, reactive causes. These are the habits, the patterns that a child develops over time. Often they're a response to their environment or maybe past difficulties, even those biological ones.
So these are learned responses,
yeah.
Like coping mechanisms that have become automatic.
Yeah. Sometimes they're serious issues like post-traumatic stress or reactive attachment disorder, RAD. But often it's just a really ingrained habit. The source material even jokingly mentions arguing with mom disorder.
Huh. I think many parents might recognize that one, that automatic pushback.
It becomes autopilot, doesn't it? It's key to see if a child is choosing poorly or if they're just running on a habit that's become too strong to easily break.
Okay, so we have biological,
yep.
Reactive. What's the third?
The third is spiritual causes. Now, this isn't just about religious wrongdoing, though it can include moral choices. It's more fundamentally about identity. How does the child see themselves?
Yeah, their self-concept.
Exactly. If a child keeps failing, or if they keep getting told they're naughty or difficult, they might start to believe it. They internalize, I am a troublemaker.
And that belief then fuels the very behavior you're trying to change. It's a cycle.
A really tough cycle. And this
yeah.
is where the diagnosis gets strategic because, like we said, it's usually not just one cause.
Can you give an example of how they weave together?
Sure. Let's take ADHD again. The impulsivity, maybe difficulty focusing, that's a biological cause.
Right.
But because of that impulsivity, maybe the child constantly blurts things out, gets into trouble, faces a lot of correction. Over time, they might develop reactive causes like having really big anger outbursts when corrected or just shutting down.
Okay, I see that connection.
And then if they keep feeling like they can't meet expectations because of the biology and the reactions they've developed, they might start to believe deep down, I'm just the bad kid. That's the spiritual cause, that shift in identity.
Wow. So the strategic plan needs to address all three layers somehow.
That's the goal, strengthening that inner core, the heart, against all those forces.
So if the problem's complex, the solution needs to be, well, comprehensive too. And that's where these seven tools come in.
Exactly. The research presents these 7 tools. Think of them less like a rigid checklist and more like 7 buckets of potential solutions. They're drawn from looking at how deep, lasting change tends to happen.
Like a recipe book almost.
That's a great way to put it. It's the recipe. And for your child's specific challenges, you'll create a unique recipe, pulling ingredients from these 7 buckets.
So maybe more firmness for one child, more relationship building for another.
Precisely. You customize the concoction.
Okay, let's open the toolbox. Tool number 1 is relationship. Why start there? Seems fundamental.
It is absolutely fundamental because relationship is what softens the heart. It's the vehicle. It's how you deliver everything else, the values, the corrections, the vision. If the relationship is tense, the child often feels like you're pulling against them.
So even something like just giving a hug to an angry kid, instead of immediately sending them away, that's strategic.
It can be hugely strategic. It's an investment in what you might call relationship capital. You need that capital to make withdrawals later when things get tough.
And the sources mention using specific words like we and together.
Yes, that's a really practical tip. When you share a good moment, maybe you're playing a game or cooking or just laughing, making a point to say, wow, we sure have fun playing together, don't we? Reinforces that sense of partnership.
It confirms you're on the same team, not adversaries.
Exactly. So once you've worked on softening the heart with relationship, you can bring in the second tool, visioning.
Visioning. What does that involve?
This gives the child perspective. It answers the crucial why question. Why are we working on this heart thing?
Okay.
You might have what the source calls a vision meeting. It's not a lecture. Ideally, it's a conversation. You explain that working on, say, being a peacemaker isn't just about making home life quieter now.
It's about the future.
Right. It's about building skills they'll need later for your marriage, for working on a team, for being a good friend or employee. You're showing them how this struggle now prepares them for life.
So it positions the parent less like a rule enforcer and more like a coach. Helping them get ready for the big game.
That's a perfect analogy. You're on their side preparing them. And even if the child, especially a defiant one, rejects the vision at first, you've planted that seed. You've shown them the bigger picture.
Okay. Relationship first, then visioning. What's tool number 3?
Tool 3 is firmness. This is essential for building character, but it's often misunderstood. It's not just about consequences.
Ah, okay. So what else is involved?
It includes both consequences and structures. Consequences are reactive. They happen after a poor choice. You know, if a child is disrespectful, maybe they lose electronics for a time.
Standard parenting stuff, yeah. What are structures then?
Structures are proactive. They're boundaries or routines you put in place before problems arise, designed to build skills or reinforce values.
Give me an example.
Okay, a firm family rule, like all screens off at 9 p.m. because our family values sleep and being ready for the next day. That's a structure. It's not a punishment. It's enforcing a family value proactively.
I see. Another structure mentioned was interesting. Deliberately saying no sometimes to small requests.
Yeah, that's about building resilience. Giving the child practice in handling disappointment. So they learn internally, okay, I'm disappointed, but I can handle this. I'll be okay. It's practicing a life skill.
And when consequences are needed for firmness,
the sources emphasize using things like the do-over. So instead of just punishment, it's, oops, that wasn't a respectful tone. Let's try that again. Or wrong response, go back out, come in again, and show me you can enter peacefully.
So it provides an immediate chance to succeed. Firmness, but with a path forward.
Exactly. Which leads nicely into tool number 4, teaching. Because firmness sets the boundary, but teaching provides the how.
Right. It's not enough to say be kind to your sister. You have to actually teach what kindness looks like in that situation.
Precisely. How do you do patience when your sibling is being annoying? You need mechanics. And the main practical tool suggested for this is the T-chart.
Okay, a T-chart. How does that work?
It's quite simple, really. You draw a big T on a piece of paper. On the left side, the child lists the specific tools or actions they plan to use when facing their challenge, like anger or maybe procrastination.
Their personal strategies.
Yes. Fine. And on the right side, they write the positive outcome they're aiming for by using those tools.
Could you walk us through an example, like for anger?
Sure. So for anger, the left side of the T-chart, the tools side, might say, 1, take 3 slow breaths. 2, walk away for 2 minutes. 3, use my I feel words calmly.
Okay.
And the right side, the outcome side, might say, I calm down instead of yelling. I can talk about the problem respectfully.
Oh, I see. It gives the child a concrete plan. Must bring some hope, right? knowing what to do instead of just feeling overwhelmed by the feeling.
Absolutely. It moves them from feeling helpless to feeling capable. They have a plan they helped create.
Okay, that's practical. What's tool number five?
Tool five is prayer. This is about connecting the child and the whole process with God's grace, with help beyond ourselves.
And how does that look practically?
The research uses a neat analogy. God's help is like water pouring from a shower head. It's available. But you don't get wet unless you actually step under the water.
So prayer is stepping under the shower.
It's the intentional act of connecting with that grace. It could mean praying with your child about their struggles. Or, if they're resistant, it might just mean the parent praying for the child.
Like praying for a cooperative spirit in that challenging teenager, maybe even while they're asleep.
Exactly. It could also involve reading scripture together, acts of service, fellowship, anything that helps connect the child's heart with God's resources for change. It anchors the whole strategy.
All right. Tool number six.
Number six is coaching. This is where the parent steps into the role of like a helper or counselor. The source uses the term paraclete, one who comes alongside. You're actively helping them practice the skills you just taught.
So it's more active than just teaching.
Yes. It involves correcting in the moment, like we mentioned, with firmness. Whoops, that sounded disrespectful. Give it another try. But more strategically, it involves setting up actual practice sessions.
Practice sessions? Like drills?
Sort of. Short, structured practice, for example. Okay, I want you to go spend 5 minutes playing nicely with your brother. Come back and tell me one good thing that happened. You're creating opportunities to succeed.
Makes sense. Practice builds the muscle. Now, the sources mentioned a pretty intense coaching technique for impulsivity, maybe related to ADHD, calling the child's name 50 times a day.
Ah, yes. That one definitely raises eyebrows. 50 times.
It sounds exhausting. And maybe even counterproductive. Couldn't it just feel like nagging and damage that relationship we worked so hard on?
That's the absolute key tension, and it's a fair question. This strategy is only viable if that relationship foundation, tool one, is really solid, and it's not about nagging.
Okay. So what is the purpose?
It's about building a new pathway in the brain. Mm-hmm. For a child with significant impulsivity, the internal urge to ignore, to deflect, to do their own thing is often stronger than their sense of obligation to respond. Calling their name 50 times and maybe they just need to look up and make eye contact, acknowledge you is designed over time to create a tipping point. It's high-intensity training for that specific neural connection.
So you're strengthening the obligation muscle until it becomes more automatic than the impulse muscle, building a reliable response pathway.
That's the idea behind it. It's intensive, likely time-limited, and used very specifically for ingrained patterns of ignoring or non-responsiveness, not just for general attention. It's definitely a high-level intervention.
Got it. Needs careful consideration.
Yeah.
Okay, brings us to the final tool, number seven.
The last one is crucial. Transferring responsibility. This is all about making sure the child ultimately owns their behavior and the solutions, not the parent.
How does that work if the parent is setting up the plan?
The parent guides, but the child has to do the work. So if your child starts yelling, instead of the parent yelling back or immediately solving it, the parent might say calmly, "Wow, you seem really angry right now. I can't really talk to you when you're yelling. Let me know when you're calm enough to speak respectfully."
Ah, so you're handing the responsibility for managing the anger back to them.
Exactly. Or remember the T-chart. Requiring the child to actually sit down and develop their own plan on that chart with your guidance, that's transferring responsibility. The parent isn't the one doing the plan. The child is.
And if they try to blame others or make excuses?
You hold the line, gently but firmly. I understand you feel your sister provoked you, but right now we need to focus on your choice to yell. Let's talk about how you can handle that differently next time. You keep bringing it back to their responsibility.
Okay, that's the full toolkit. Relationship, visioning, firmness, teaching, prayer, coaching, and transferring responsibility. Now, how do we put it all together? Let's take that defiant 12-year-old example, disrespectful, angry outbursts. Where do you even begin?
Great question. It's not just using all tools at once. It's strategic prioritization. With that defiant 12-year-old, you absolutely start with relationship. Maybe for the first week or two, that's your primary focus.
Just rebuilding connection.
Yes. Intense focus on connection. Maybe finding a shared activity. 15 minutes of focused, fun time each day. Lots of positive affirmations. You need to soften that heart, build up the relational bank account before you introduce the harder stuff.
Okay, makes sense. Heart softened first, then what?
Then you introduce visioning. You hold that meeting. You talk about the goal, developing a cooperative spirit, emotional flexibility. You explain why it matters for their future job, relationships, happiness. You set the direction.
Got it. Relationship, then vision. Now we bring in the structure.
Now you can layer in firmness. This means clear expectations and consistent consequences. Maybe it's a rule about respectful tone. If the defiance or disrespect appears, there's an immediate calm consequence, perhaps losing screen time or missing a privilege until they demonstrate self-control.
And you pair that firmness with teaching.
Absolutely. You have conversations about anger, maybe framing it as energy that needs a good plan. And this is where you introduce the T-chart. You sit down with them, but they come up with the steps for managing that defiance or anger when it bubbles up.
So they own the plan.
They own the plan. And all along, you're using prayer, praying for them, maybe praying with them if they're open, asking for that soft heart and cooperative spirit. And you're coaching them in the moment.
Like saying, uh-oh, I hear your voice getting tight. Looks like you're getting frustrated.
Yeah.
Can you use one of the tools from your chart right now?
Perfect example. You're prompting them to use the skills they've identified. And finally, you consistently use transferring responsibility. If they argue about the consequence, you don't get drawn in.
You just state the boundary.
Right. I understand you're upset about losing your phone, but the choice to be disrespectful led to this. We need to focus on you managing your reactions. You keep the focus on their choices.
What's powerful here seems to be the focus. You're not trying to fix everything at once.
Exactly. You pick a key area, like defiance. You apply the tools strategically to that. And the amazing thing the research suggests is that when you start getting movement in one core area of the heart,
it affects other things too.
Yes. It starts to impact the anger. Maybe their focus improves. Their self-concept starts shifting. You create positive momentum.
So, wrapping this up, what's the big takeaway for parents listening who feel stuck in that reactive cycle?
I think the biggest takeaway is confidence. When you develop a strategic plan like this, it changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just reacting out of frustration anymore. You have a roadmap. You know when to lean into relationship, when to apply firmness, how to teach the skills.
And it stops parents from defaulting to just getting angry themselves, which often happens when you feel powerless and lack a plan.
Precisely. This framework is designed to empower the parent and the child, reducing that cycle of anger and frustration. It shows that targeted effort focused on the heart really can bring about significant change no matter the challenge.
Okay, so a final thought to leave everyone with, something to mull over from this deep dive.
Maybe this. Don't get overwhelmed thinking you have to fix everything over and over. The heart, that place where these tendencies live, is complex. But the key is momentum.
Just starting the movement.
Yeah. All you really need is to start moving things just a little bit in the right direction in one key area. Tackle the defiance first, or the anger, because getting even small progress in one part of the heart often creates a kind of positive ripple effect. It starts to influence all the other challenges. So focus on that first strategic step. Start the momentum.